Blog Talk Radio.
My man.
Gary Carter.
2.5 million people that were on Broadway cheering for us and celebrating along with us. That's something that was one of the most exhilarating moments in my life, in my career.
Gary Gentry, Jerry Krugman, Nolan Ryan, Chris Benson, Phil Negro, Charlie Hubbard, Peterson joined us.
Make it happen. Let's go
Mets! Hello, everybody, and good afternoon, good evening. It's the Cult of Mets Personalities podcast. We haven't been with you guys in quite a while, but it's nice to be back, and unfortunately not quite that nice to be a baseball fan in New York if you're a fan of a National League team, because we have a little problem here. This Mets team sucks, to be very blunt, and the team itself is not as much of an issue to me as the ownership and the management and everything else. So we're going to break through that just a bit. I have my distinguished colleague, Gene Anthony, with me, and Mr. Dave Singer trying to call in and having a little problem, but he's going to be joining us hopefully very, very soon. Gene, what's cooking, buddy? How's everything?
How's everything? Well, if you're not a baseball fan, it's great. I feel the same way. This is worse than the Willie Randolph days for me.
Elaborate. What to you is the main difference here?
Just the inability to kind of, you're never going to see a start like that, you know, first 10, 12 games, and then all of a sudden just the wheels come off. And I mean, I hate to use the word jinx or hexed or, but this is horrible. What we see is horrible, you know, the old hand, foot, and mouth disease, getting Todd Frazier, who's never on the stable list, and he's out forever, and Cespedes decides to let us know he's got two bad heels, and we still signed him. So, yeah, it's horrible from top to bottom.
Well, I mean, it's weird. We've gone through similar stuff. I mean, in a bubble, each thing, you know, we've had weird injuries and weird everything, but the collection of things that are happening now and the idea that they're having problems even concealing some of the ineptitude, I mean, to me is feeling very hopeless, you know, and obviously I think one of the reasons why I know I can only speak for myself, but one of the reasons why I kind of really wanted to podcast tonight with you guys is because we're headed toward the trade deadline, and I don't know about you, and obviously Dave is with us right now as well. Like, I don't know about either one of you, but I have this sense of doom on the horizon. The air smells like the carcass of Scott Kazmir, and I kind of wanted to have the dialogue and start putting things out there beforehand because I have this feeling like there's something really stupid is about to happen. Dave, hey, how are you?
Hey, what's up, fellas? A little technical difficulty, but I'm on. How are you?
Absolutely. How do you feel?
About the Mets?
Yeah. Well, in general, but yeah, that could be one place to start.
You know, it's just, this season is just kind of a lost season, so. But the sheer magnitude of the idiocy we've encountered, whether it's hand, foot, and mouth disease, you know, Cespedes with Donald Trumpian type heel spurs, just random people going down at different times, and the front office's inability to kind of right the ship has been a disappointment. But at this point, I'm just, you know, kind of in the wait and see mode to see what happens.
I mean, do you feel, when you say wait and see, I mean, get into that a little bit deeper. Like, are you just wanting to see how it plays out, to see how you're going to kind of engage with the team in the future? Are you rooting for anything specific? I mean, kind of, what does wait and see mean exactly to you?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm a Mets fan for life. You know, at this point, at my age, I'm not changing teams, you know.
Right.
But I'm more in the near term. You know, we're hearing Zach Wheeler might be moved, which I personally would be for. But, they, you know, moving a guy like, you know, Astruble, is probably going to happen, and a good thing. I think we'll hold on to Batista. You know, he's cheap and he's producing. And then we'll see, you know, who else goes. You know, there's it's a weird market this year because there's tons of teams looking to dump really good players. So we kind of got crapped on a little bit for the return we got for Familia, but I'm not all that disappointed with it, you know, to be honest with you. But, yeah, that's what I'm waiting on, what the next week's going to bring.
Well, let's start here because, I mean, I'll just bring up sort of what's been bothering me. This concept of it being a necessity to sell off pieces. Okay, I get the free agents that are coming. That makes sense to me. But, you know, people, obviously the media is trying to generate a little craziness talking about DeGrom and Thor and everything. But just, you know, we settle on like a Wheeler as an example. And to me, like amidst the media frenzy and the fact that baseball is something where, you know, teams just sort of copy each other regardless of whether something makes any sense whatsoever. I mean, the idea of like the shift and nobody bunts because no one else does. Like that concept to me is making me concerned we're going to lose Wheeler because and have the team sort of not even know why they dealt him. And so there's a couple things I want to get into, but this is the first one. The idea of, okay, so you're going to trade conceptually. You have an asset that has that's controllable, young, finally, supposedly, you know, seems like he sort of stabilized himself. So we waited all this time, right? And you have four starters that are seemingly have figured it out. A couple maybe more than others, but for the most part, we finally got that rotation, okay? They're stable. And they're all still cheap, and they're all still here for a couple of years. So the concept of just trading the cards in because that's what you just do to get more cards – to me, the concept of winning is not part of this. So for instance, if you think of it, you know, I've heard this phrase over and over, the idea of getting younger and more athletic. You know, completely ignoring that the main injuries that we've had that have hurt the team have been to young athletic players. So it's not necessarily, there's not necessarily a correlation there completely. And as far as you're talking about, let's say somebody would talk about the players not performing up to their capabilities. Well, that's, you know, Harvey, although he also got hurt. You know, we can go on and on. There are a lot of young players that haven't played up to capabilities. So there's really no given. So we, you know, if you really look at it, we kind of got a good haul for the last rebuild, and we're there. We're just not finishing the team. This past offseason, Philadelphia got the best hitter and pitcher for God knows what reason, and we were sold Jason Vargas as a starter. We didn't get Moustakas, we get Todd Frazier, who should be a bench player. I mean, stuff like that. We got Gonzalez, and look who Philly got. And so with that in mind, first of all, you know, there's no GM in place, and it's already been put out there that this trio will not be the GM. So we're getting rid of an asset, theoretically, when there's no plan. So how do you know what pieces we even flip and need? And you're going to trade Wheeler for what? And then, but still, we're going to retain the other pitcher. So we're kind of banking on a strength, but we're going to weaken it, and with no concept going forward. And then Cespedes gets hurt, which I'll get into more later. But he gets hurt. You have half that contract insured. Jeff Wilpon already talked about how every year Wright's insurance doesn't get spent because he puts in an escrow just in case. So you think after the year is done, you have that money available. They should have $50 million. Of free money coming into next offseason, and yet there's still this narrative that we're going to get rid of Wheeler, and that equals what? Like, where's this going? So that's what I'd like you guys to tackle. Give me your thought on it and explain the logic behind even taking offers for him. I mean, you know, no one's going to blow you away. So, Gene, you hit me first. What do you think?
I'd like to hit you. Every time I get a text message from you or talk to you, you remind me of being a Mets fan, and I want to kill you.
Please hit me hard enough to just put me out of my misery.
No, I'm just going to maim you. The thing
please,
is,
please, that's good.
This is a time when you should be getting a Wheeler, not giving one away. And so this would be the time to sneak pieces that, and it just seems like with all the analytics, and all the, you know, the information that we have, we're not making good moves. I mean, Dave, I'm not upset either that Familia was gone, but his stock should have been a little bit higher than what they got for him. And, you know, I honestly, the way, and it just might be total frustration, but if we were going to make a trade, you know, if it was Syndergaard or DeGrom, you know, think about what you could actually get for them. I don't have enough faith in the team to get something good in return. I really don't. And theoretically, if you take a DeGrom who's 30 years old and who knows if he's going to pitch this well forever, who knows if he's going to get hurt or not, but you take a chance and you say, you know what, I'm going to get three big pieces for the highest rated guy right now on the market that's a pitcher. I don't trust this management to do it. So I wouldn't do the smaller Wheeler thing. If I was going to do it, I would do a bigger splash. But I don't trust this management to make the right move. I don't think they have the capabilities to make the right move.
Gene, real quick before we get on to Dave too, just the concept of if someone else is putting this puzzle together, is it even ethical from a business standpoint to get rid of these assets before the person that's going to take the responsibility of the outcome is even here? Like, what is the point of doing these moves now? Like, what? I'm completely lost. I can't see it from any angle. I mean, is there any way you can phrase this or see this where it makes any sort of sense?
I don't remember this ever happening. I've watched baseball my whole life. I don't remember this. You had to get rid of players at the end of the season if you weren't in contention. I remember trying to get players if you were in contention, but the trade deadline wasn't as this magnified for every team. And I think you're right. It goes into like the current state of baseball. Like, yeah, you have to sell off pieces or you have to buy pieces. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
And yeah, what are we working toward here?
Dave, what do you think?
I don't see a clear plan. I don't see a clear plan for, look, hang in there. And I know that they can't tell the fans everything, but in 2018, you got to be a little bit more transparent than they're being.
Gene, there can't be a plan. The GM isn't hired yet.
There's a three-headed GM.
Like,
we got GMs.
But what's the plan? Like, they said they're not hiring these three. They've already put it out there. So, like, there literally can't be a plan.
Then why would you have three if you're not going to hire one? Like,
oh God, help me! I'm, seriously, I don't know. Hey, Dave, how's life?
Yeah, that is crazy. I don't know why they didn't name Rico the GM for the rest of this year. And I mean, you have, you know, what the hell is Omar going to do? You know, it's such a strange situation. But yeah, you know, and the thing is with trading all these guys away, you look at really the economics of baseball. And, you know, how things have changed where it's much more important to have a deep run in the playoffs or get a World Series than it is to be consistent over time. You know, so it's like new economics, old economics. I don't know who's buzzing. Are you buzzing? Nick, is that you? Are you okay?
No, it's my line. I'm trying to fix it as you're talking.
All right. You're doing a good job of making it worse. But the thing is, you know, so DeGrom is under control. The earliest he could be a free agent is 2021, right? He'll give you a hometown discount. You know, I would do everything in my power to lock that guy up. You know, Wheeler, we got him under control one more year, and then he becomes a free agent. Same with Flores. So, you know, I could see if you get something really good in return. And, you know, I love Wilmer, of course, but he is what he is, right? The same with Wheeler. You know, Wheeler's all about, you know, upside potential and staying healthy. But if the haul was right for those guys, I would do it. But if it's not, don't do it, right? They'll perform great in their walk year next year, and then maybe you can get the same kind of return next year that you would this year because of the year-to-year. Oh, go ahead.
Well, no, I just want to ask you something on top of that. Why do we need a haul? Like, what is the – do you think that the concept, the idea that we're all sort of trained to think about, well, maximizing the value and eliminating the thought of, well, they're valuable to us. Like, there's value in winning. Like, it seems like the value of winning is not part of the equation anymore. Because, like, why – let's say Wheeler's in his walk year and he's stable. Why wouldn't you sign Wheeler? Like, somebody else will. Like, why do we bring in Jason Vargas and get rid of Wheeler? It doesn't – like, it doesn't make any sense.
No,
it
I'm
makes
there.
No sense. He throws 98.
I'm with you a million
percent.
Yeah, I'm with you a million percent. I'm always about signing these guys that are kind of in that, you know, 24 to 30 year age group, because that's when guys are productive. When people get in their 30s, the rapid rate of decline for a Major League Baseball player, non-steroid era, after age 32 is tremendous. All the staff bear that out. So I don't know what the hell they're thinking, getting these old retreads and bringing in Todd Frazier so we can masturbate with his hands and salt and pepper around his
face. Right.
Great chemistry. Who the fuck cares about that stuff? I want to win baseball games, you know?
Oh, my God.
That's just crazy to me. I don't get the whole concept of what they're trying to do.
What about the idea that you never hear about anybody, never hear about extending Wheeler for a year or two? Because, you know, Wheeler's agent, Wheeler himself has got to see the concept of he's going to have trouble, little trouble next year, getting a crazy amount of money. And also he's had some injury issues. So, you know, how much could Wheeler possibly cost you for a few years now? I mean, you know, Barkas is making
that,
a friggin' fortune.
I disagree. People overvalue themselves. I think Wheeler's like, hey, man, get me to a contender. I'm super healthy right now. I'm a horse. Mm-hmm. I'll go out and win, you know, 8 or 9 games the rest of the season.
Uh-huh.
Show myself in the postseason, kill it next year with a 15-win season, get the big money. That's all he's thinking about. He's not thinking about, let me tread water with the Mets for a little while longer and wait till I'm 30 and then get the big money. Nah, he wants payday. He wants to go win. I think Wheeler actually wants to leave. I think everyone else wants to stay.
Based on what?
Whereas I think Wheeler wants out.
Based on what? Because the last thing we heard from Wheeler, unless I missed something, was him calling Sandy begging not to go. Because, I mean, the guy's been was shelved for 2 years. He's probably, I mean, again, this is just my own perception, but probably psychologically sort of freaked by that. He just got his career back. He thought it might have been gone. And he's got to look at Matt Harvey as an example of, well, it could all just disappear on you. And if they offered him something fair, I mean, do you really think he would just, he'd look for some ungodly amount of money? I mean, maybe, but, I mean, is there anything that you saw that maybe makes you think that way?
I think he wants to win. I just think he wants to win. I do remember that when he asked Sandy to stay. That was a while ago.
Yeah.
When he was just returning. I think now he's back and he knows he's pitching, you know, 7 innings and he feels great. I don't know. I just think he wants to go win and then.
We should.
See what happens.
Ready though? I mean, like, isn't this? Am I wrong, dude? Like, is we're to me it seems like we're ready to win. They're just refusing to finish the team. When Cespedes is in the lineup, right? We are automatically a 500 team, at least. And, like, when the few days that the team was intact, we won pretty easily. And, you know, the only season we had for half a year, everybody in place, we went to a World Series. So, in theory, it's not Cespedes' magic touch. It's just a good bat. So, if we actually got a good bat and stuck it in the middle of this lineup, a couple of hitters, you know, we'd be a completely different team because we have great pitching. It doesn't take that much. They just need to get stars in here, like real players. I'm lost, man. Like, I don't see us being far away. I just see them just folding for no reason, literally because they just believe what everyone's telling them and not seeing that the team stinks because they just don't have enough. They didn't put enough money into it. They didn't get they invested stupid this offseason. Stupid, like just bluntly stupid, I think. I mean, everyone in the world knew these were not, you know, in stone moves. And you bring in Jason Vargas. Jason Vargas was good for 3 months his entire career. I mean, what is he going to all of a sudden be a 17-game winner for the next 10 years? Like, what does it make any sense? Oh, God.
The best player on the team this year, the best player on the team this year had to fight and beg and scratch to stay in the big leagues.
Right.
I mean, he was Nimmo was sent down, and he's been our most consistent player. Ash Dribble's having a good season too, but this kid's been he's been way more than I thought he would be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
As he doubles down the line, yeah.
There we go. I don't know. This is frustrating.
To not score on that double, he's so slow. God, I'm slow as I think I'm faster than Wilmer. I'm pretty sure I am.
Oh my God. Well, let me bring that up, too. That's a crazy thing. I keep hearing about Flores being dealt. Like, Flores has no value to anybody except for maybe, like, a real deep bench player, except for us because he's got, you know, he's one of these Mets that has, like, you know, a moment or two. And what he's worth so much more to us than he is to anybody else. And he's not making that much. Like, why would we trade Flores? Like, we're not going to get anything bad for him. What is the point of just dumping Wilmer Flores?
That's not a dump. There is a team in contention, and I don't know which one, that has a need for Wilmer Flores, right? They've got
some
hole or some injury worry or something where they need Wilmer for this year to try to win.
Okay.
That's valuable to them. And, you know, and he has proven that he can play multiple positions.
Yeah.
And if you look at his stats, his RBI production both minor leagues and in the big leagues, it's really good. It's a lot better than crappy bench players that are out there. So it is valuable.
Sure. Is he more valuable than Familia, who we got nothing for?
Of course not.
Exactly. So what are we getting back? Like, I understand why somebody might want Flores if they're in contention, but what are you willing to give up for Wilmer Flores, realistically?
Yeah, we're not going to get much back for him. We're going to get probably a high A ball top on it, and maybe some other kind of throw in, you know, pitcher, 24-year-old that's been AAA for 2 years, you know, that's a weak sister. And that's about it.
Yeah, that's my point. That's my point. Like, if we're getting something and it's useful, that's all fine and good. But if we're trying to, you know, kind of contend next year, we've got to get parts next year too, like next trading deadline. I mean, I said this online. I was kind of thinking this way, sort of, if we're going to, let's say, need a decent starter. So are we going to take the prospects we got for Wheeler and turn around and look for a Wheeler type on his free agent year? Maybe we can get Wheeler. Why don't we just trade for Wheeler right now? He'll cost us nothing. You know, like, what? I don't get it.
We'll trade Flores.
We have him all year. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I was thinking I was missing something, because it seems, I mean, it's getting so nutty that it's just the logic. I can't even see an angle. I don't see how competent people can get together and this makes sense, any of it, from any angle.
I think you got to take it one step further. You know, we're not doing anything this year. Guy's free agent next year, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so let's get something back from, because you got to kind of stagger the team. You can't have Wilmer Flores be a random utility guy on your team forever, you know, because he's going to be
a free agent.
He's going to want $10 million a year, right?
Can he get it? I mean, look what players got this offseason. Who's giving Flores $10 million? He can try. We might get him for $1 million at the ending of the offseason when no one wants him for that price. I mean, it's possible because he's comfortable here. I mean, he's not that good. He's good. I mean, he's great to have if you're in a run.
So let's take that hypothetical off. Let's say it's $2 million a year we'll sign up for as a free agent.
Rock on.
So we can, but why not get some players for him? Why not get something back for him now?
We don't need
him next year. That doesn't fit in. And then if we want him back, we'll get him back.
Sure.
That's how I felt about Familia. I'm like, okay, fine. We can get a great haul. We got $1 million in international money.
Mm-hmm.
I like the pitcher, actually. And if we're going to sign him, we'll sign him in 4 months. What's the big deal?
Yeah, well, I mean, that aspect I get. But I guess if you take it a step further, let's say you have some stuff in your house you want to get rid of. Everyone has stuff that's cluttering up their environment that you think is worth money, but you sort of, like, it's not worth the effort of actually selling it, so it just takes up room. You know, the effort of going through stuff to get a dollar or two of value of stuff you're never going to use. I mean, what's the purpose of getting a double-A ball hitter that has no upside? You know, it's going to reach AAA or have a spot star. I mean, those are dime a dozen. You can always almost make an argument that it's better to just reward the guys in your own system than to start bringing in duplicates of these scrub players. So, like, it's just taking the bats away from people. Pay for a flight to get them out of here? Like, what are you getting for Flores exactly?
I think, you know, familiarity breeds contempt, right? So we're very close to these players. We know what we've got.
Sure.
We send scouts out all over. We look at these other players, and you see something. You see something you might like, and you get a 3-for-1. You know, one of those three might pop up and be better, and then you can still get the other guy back. So I think it's just the nature of the game. You know,
that's fair.
People have to cycle out. And it's not like he's a star, right? He's a cop.
Do you believe you're doing that, though? Let me ask you a question, though. I totally agree with you. Do you believe that they're doing that? Like, they're sending scouts out, and they're really bringing back guys that they think might be diamonds in the rough.
Yes. Yes, of course I do. Of course the scouts are out
there. Do you think last year, when they traded the guys last year, do you really think that they were just wait till they see X, Y, and Z? They'll know that we knew what we were doing. Like, do you really
think that
the Mets had felt those guys had upside?
Nick, calm down. That's how we got Syndergaard.
All right.
So I'm not saying
for a good player, though.
Every stone becomes a diamond, but that's what they do. That's how we got Syndergaard.
Wait.
Come on.
Hold on. Let me back up. We got Syndergaard as part of a major deal for, like, one of the best prospects in baseball, and Sandy sort of was clever and, you know, kind of, you're right.
We got Syndergaard. We got Syndergaard for R.A. Dickey, who was in his walk year of free agency.
Right, but we also got Cy Young Award. At the time, Yeah, Cy Young and Darno was a major prospect at the time. We got a top end, and Syndergaard wasn't a no name. Syndergaard was one of their best.
Talking about Syndergaard.
But
Syndergaard was
got both
on that deal. He was a low minor leaguer. He was the throw in. And everybody said
Buck was a throw in. No, Buck. Buck was a throw in.
All the scouts were like, "Hey, watch Syndergaard. Darno is a nice player, but Syndergaard's going to be the guy." And sure as shit, 3 years later he was.
Right, but Dave, Syndergaard still was one of, I think he was like the third best pitching prospect of their system, plus they got their best prospect, plus they got another guy, a Herrera, that still might make the majors. They got three guys. I mean, that's a major haul. But we're not getting anything close to that, you know. It's like my concern, my thought is not the fact that we are trading like somebody, like Dickey honestly had, I can't believe they took Dickey, because Dickey, who's a 40-year-old, like he knew he was going to regress. And that was nuts. That was wonderful. My point is, like, stuff like Flores, just getting rid of him, and you know the guys you're getting back are not Syndergaard-level. There's just, to me, they're not even bench players. They're just sort of whatever. So I don't understand the need for the process, because honestly, you know, you want to win some games this year. Like, if the team rebounds this year, I mean, we're not winning anything, but if they rebound, you know, you kind of get momentum, winning momentum into next year. What is the point of just losing and finishing with 100 losses? Like, for what reason? I mean, we're not going to get a better draft pick. I mean, like, it's not tanking. So I don't understand the point of just letting it all go and just having this narrative through the off season that we're a bunch of losers. When, you know, fight to get back to 500, and the next year you can do something, but you can't do it if you get rid of everybody. If you get value, rock on. I mean,
all right, so
Herrera might bring you somebody. Shoot.
Let me change the narrative a little bit, okay?
Shoot.
Because we can't have the same argument against every player that we want to potentially get rid of. Who would you get rid of?
To me personally, I wouldn't look at it like that. I would look at, well, what do we need? What are people offering us for who? And then you just judge it based on what the offer is. So basically, if someone wants to give me somebody of value for Flores, 100%. But I'm not looking at like, well, I need to get rid of this guy, what's available. To me, it's that's part of the problem. We're looking at what assets we can get rid of for what reason.
No, I'm not saying, oh, let's get rid of. I'm saying, okay, there's two sides to every, you have to give to get. So who would you give?
Right.
And who would you not give, like right now? Who are the four players that you would give? I don't know for who, but right now we.
Well, that's the thing. I gotta know. Like that's the whole point, though, isn't it? Like you're saying like for who? Like how much money would you give up for what? So, but you're not telling me what I'm getting. So how would I know how much I'm going to give up? And
all right, here's
so
why I would trade. Since you're not capable of saying it, I will say it. I would trade Dom Smith, Kevin Plawecki, Wilmer Flores.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Wheeler, Devin Mesoraca, Seth Lugo.
Mats.
I would not trade Mats. Paul Sewald, Corey Oswald, Robert Gsellman, Jerry Blevins. That's the guys that I'm very comfortable with. Well, it depends. That's what I would tell the world. These are my 10, and I'm listening. So you come at me with offers. I mean, but you can't just, you know, we don't know what other people are offering.
Okay,
we have
so if
to
you're,
come out of
I get
perspective.
So the idea is basically who do you want to take off the table? But the thing is though, you didn't say let's take Conforto, but there are packages I'd consider for him. Well, depends on what they're going to offer.
I would not consider anyone for Conforto. I would not consider anyone for DeGrom, Syndergaard, personally Mats, you know, and Nimmo. Those are my guys that are Rosario. Those are my untouchables.
Well, what about Mookie Betts for Nimmo? Of course you would. So,
right.
I mean, my point is it's like people, they want to be nuts. I would never have in a million years thought that Dickey could turn into Darno and Syndergaard. But even at the time, when that was made, I couldn't believe it. It was that crazy. So, like, that stuff happens, you know. But my point is that we're shopping people. I mean, outside of taking maybe DeGrom and the, let's say, the pitchers off the table, I don't know what people are offering.
So we were shopping Dickey. I'm saying you dangle the bait and then you see what you can haul in.
But again, the GM is not even here. We haven't hired him. So like I guess that's my point. It's less about who we're getting rid of, and it's more about the fact that it's turned into the action of getting rid of people rather than the action of actually bringing things in you need. The strategy
isn't
there.
No, that's your perspective.
But there's no GM. Where's the strategy? Like the guy that's doing the strategy hasn't been hired yet. So what are they?
Well,
what is? What are they playing for? The trading.
We made a trade and we got guys back. So
okay.
You can't say that there's no strategy because we just made a trade. So there's guys available and we're looking at offers. I mean, that's how it works.
I know, Gene, split the hairs here. I mean, like I do hear Dave's point. I mean, obviously I have a strong opinion on it too. What do you think?
Well, you're taking it to the next level. Like we've dumped a lot of guys. It's all speculation. So there's only one guy that's been traded. So if we were talking tonight and they had just dumped four guys, we could have this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It might just be that per Alderson type approaches, they're just dangling everybody out there just to see what's sticking.
Mm-hmm.
Because until they sign it, you know, you're watching teams get a little bit desperate, you know. And if Flores is on the table, any team that's in contention against the Yankees with two stud lefties in their bullpen or two good lefties in their bullpen might want a Flores to come off the bench, like Sean Dunstan came off the bench for us back in the day.
Right.
I don't know what that's going to bring you in return.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You've got to have smart people. And it goes back to my original point. I don't really trust trust their assessment of players to say these are the ones that are good that we can, you know. I don't know how much Alderson getting Thor was an accident, but it worked out really well and it's a great story. But I don't, you know, I would meet somewhere in the middle because I like the fact that we're acknowledging that this season's over and we're not going to pretend like anything can happen. But I would like to see some smart moves being made. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago that Harvey could have brought in a lot of talent. And we were like, there's no way in the world we're going to trade him. Well, hindsight's, you know, 2020. If you have smart people in place that will say, look, we will take guys that, or a guy, don't have to be guys. Of the two of you, you know, you and Dave, do you honestly believe that Syndergaard's going to turn into the stud that he thinks he's going to be?
I mean, do you?
Oh, you're asking the question.
I'm not 100%. I think that guy can get in his own way. Now, do I want to trade him for nothing? Absolutely not. But that guy's got a lot of value. Holy crap, he does.
Yeah.
But he's a mental head case.
Sure. Yeah.
You know?
I can't disagree.
I mean, look at the pitching people that Detroit Tigers had that they traded away. I mean, if you're a fan of that team, you got to be going crazy. And they weren't able to do too much with it, but they traded those guys away. They lost those guys, and that would be frustrating.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of what I'm looking at that's getting me a little anxious. And just to kind of just step back a bit, you know, when I was talking about Flores, I'm not really concerned literally about Flores. My concern is that the conceptual thing about just getting into a mindset of just, well, we got to sell players X, Y, and Z, and then we'll figure out who we're going to get when we start getting offers. It's basically, that's my concern is Wheeler. To be very blunt with you, I think this team has one strength. We've been waiting for it. We have a couple of young hitters, and to me, there's no, what this is being, let's say, turned over for, and again, we're not really turning it over because we're not selling everybody, but it's basically hoping to get back to the same point so we can do it all over again. Sort of like trading Wheeler for prospects that eventually, if they work out, we can trade them for a young player. I mean, it's when does the winning happen? And that's my concern. The mentality transferring onto Wheeler, and they end up trading Wheeler for a couple of, you know, prospects, and what does it do? At the best, we'll get a Wheeler. You know what I mean? Like, even Thor hasn't been wonderful for us. So, like, what? Wheeler went through growing pains. He's finally at the point where he looks like he could be serviceable for a couple of years, like, and relatively cheap. Why, like, what are we getting for him? I mean, if it's wonderful, but, like, do you guys get the same feeling? Maybe I'm wrong. Like, we're looking at a dump here because they haven't made a good trade since since Dickey. That's it. I mean,
everybody else
has been dumped,
they did
right?
But they traded for Wheeler. They traded Beltran. I mean, it's you know,
so long ago, 2010, dude.
But I think
years ago.
Jay Bruce.
No, I think that was a good trade.
Yeah.
To Cleveland.
And I think,
I'm sorry. Oh, that's right. I'm so sorry. That's right. Originally, it turned out to be a bust for both teams.
Yeah,
Bruce helped. Well, yeah, I guess Bruce helped us for a couple months. that we traded Bruce to Cleveland for nothing. I mean, so I mean, it was Bruce was better, but it was almost a little bit better than Awash. But we really didn't. I mean, it was win. Okay, I'll give you that.
You know who holds the answers to all these questions, and you know is one person, and that's Jay Horowitz, because when he was on the show, he tried to convince us back in 2015 that the team would rebound, and we all but told him, get off the air, you're delusional, and they went to the World Series. And so I believe that he is the sensei, and he knows what's going to go on with his team, and why he's not the GM is beyond me, because he's bought into everything that they told him. And you remember? He was adamant about they had a plan. And we were like, you're out of your mind they have a plan. And 3 months later, they're in the World Series.
Yeah, the plan worked. I mean, I have no problem with the way stuff turned out. Some things worked well, some things didn't. They just didn't finish. I think the team's still there. The window's open. They're just shutting it themselves. That's the way I see it. Well, Dave, I texted this to Gene before. We kind of went back and forth a bit. I want your opinion on this. All right, so Cespedes. Okay, we're talking about, so he has this heel issue. So the team came out and said that from the very beginning, they knew that this was an issue that he had to manage. From the time they signed him, from the time they traded him, they saw it. Okay, he was up front. So now his whole career, he's been able to stay on the field, right? You know, cause managing it. And the last thing that the Mets knew, that's what the condition was. He was going to manage till the end of his career if possible. So thinking about that, right, you think back two off-seasons ago. Remember the video of Mike Barwis, the guy that's still with the team. Remember Cespedes lifting 1,000 pounds? Let me ask you a question. Now, keep in mind that's Jeff Wilpon's buddy. He brought this guy in. And out of all the medical people that were dismissed, Barwis is still here. So from what you know about the gym, would lifting 1,000 pounds in gym work, does that involve your feet? Please elaborate for me.
Yeah. All that stuff in hindsight now, it's pretty tough.
What's hindsight for us? You know, it wasn't hindsight for them. They knew.
Yeah, I don't know, Nick. You're like the master of these unanswerable, you know, historical, rearward-looking, you know, questions. And, yeah, I mean, I guess they should have just had him soaking his feet in the hot tub while he's doing his nails and eating bonbons instead of playing golf.
Dude, not even that. Dude, not that. Specifically weight training. Like that, what you saw in that video, if I was the owner of a team and you came to me and said, listen, I have one condition. I have a condition that needs surgery I'm managing. It's the heels of my feet. If I turned around and said, you want to get into 1,000-pound weightlifting? Like, this sounds nuts. Football training? Remember the videos of him squatting and, like, having the barbells literally on his heels and squatting and sort of walking around the gym with the giant barbells?
I remember. And the woman was there filming him, and he was smiling from ear to ear.
Huh?
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah. That year worked out well for him. He hasn't been the same since, right? just checking. Just checking. I don't know. You get where I'm coming with. That's the first direct evidence of what Pedro Martinez said about Jeff Wilpon pushing people when they're hurt and having them do things and then there being repercussions from it. Because Pedro says Jeff Wilpon ruined his career, ruined his arm. So what do you think? I mean, no one's talking about it. I haven't seen that once in the media yet, at least. Is that significant to you, at least? Am I making too much of it?
I think you're making too much of it.
Not.
Okay.
What do you think,
talk to me.
No, I think it's all mismanagement, but it's looking back and, you know, of course you say that now, but and everybody that was watching the video said that's not probably a good thing, but yeah, if they knew how they would sign a guy with bad heels, yeah.
But I
honestly believe they thought they'd be bailed out with their insurance contract.
But they were. They are. They're just not using the money. And they're not going to. Like, well, Gene, just take a step back. So, yes, it is. We all sort of, like, gasped when we saw that a bit. But the idea is that, yes, it is, like, it is, I guess, looking back and reevaluating things and being judgmental from my point of view. But they knew he had a condition like this. So the point is, from their standpoint, they had more information than us, and they going into it, and then literally the guy in charge, the guy that's been had fingers pointed at him forever for doing exactly this kind of stuff, he's the guy that found him and put him in, and he's the guy that couldn't get rid of this off season. So to me, I mean, maybe they didn't even tell Barwis that Cespedes has had this problem, and they put that guy into a bad position. But I mean, that to me, I don't know, that's a huge thing for me, and I just, maybe I'm completely off. That's why I have you guys to tell me I'm an idiot. But it's nagging at me that this is a thing they knew and they pushed Cespedes into it. Maybe he was compliant or completely into it, but I mean, my God, it's like if you have a shoulder injury and then somebody lifts weights because you told them to.
Are you saying that the Mets pushed him into those gigantic workouts?
Yes. Well, I'm not saying it. I know it. Because that was a guy that Jeff Wilpon was friends with, found him, brought him into the Mets, and introduced him to Cespedes. And then they had ESPN tape it. And the Mets watched it, and they put it out. They publicized it. So, yeah, I am saying that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
I know.
Let's take a sidestep here. And this is my frustration, So, both of you have mentioned that, you know, Mats is – well, implied that Mats is semi-untouchable. And I just don't see it. Like, let's have a conversation about what do you guys – I mean, I know that there's a lefty. I know that he has some good games. Mm-hmm. But this guy reminds me of Glendon Rush, where he gets the red patch on his face and he can't get past the one hitter that something happens and he just implodes. He can't hold a lead. Of the pitchers – the five stars that were supposed to be there. This guy cannot hold a lead. And it doesn't seem like anything's working with this guy. He's got a little bit of Ron Darling in him where he outthinks himself or he's just plain stupid. But where are you seeing good flashes for him? Seriously, I mean, tell me where you're seeing the good flashes because maybe I'm missing something or I'm just picking on him. But, like, tonight he gives a lead back right away. And I know that this is not the best team to be pitching for, but you give DeGrom four runs, he could probably get two wins with it.
Well, I think for Matt, you know, one, you know, you need a lefty starter. I mean, and he's a middle of the rotation, back of the rotation starter. He's not a stud.
Okay.
But he is under control until 2022. So we have three more years to either work with him or trade him. And in the interim, he's good enough to be at least a number four starter on almost any team, in my opinion, especially because he's a lefty. So to me, it's a no-brainer that I'm not saying he's untouchable, but I wouldn't trade him personally.
Okay, as long as he's not regarded as your number three or a high two, or a low two, that's I'm fine with that. But people talk like he's in the same conversation with Jake and Noah, and he's not.
No, not hardly.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, My perspective on that is it's less about Mats. It's more about the overall entity of the starters. I mean, I'm one of these guys that believe you need to have a strength, a significant strength somewhere to be able to get through the postseason and to be able to get a little deeper in. And also I'm looking at the market. And yes, you're right about Mats, but if you really look around, I mean, that's what is that, 90% of all the pitchers in MLB? It's a weak – kind of a weak-minded group that's out there, you know. And you even have people like you're talking about Mats. You have people like a David Price that can't – it wilts at all times, you know, and it has more ability. So the point is somebody like Mats on the open market would still run you $8 million a year or something like that, $7 million.
Yeah.
So, and the team doesn't spend money. So my point is they're going to have – somebody – if it's not going to be a Mats-level pitcher pitching in that slot, we're going to see Oswalt – we're going to see their scrub players. And on the depth chart, we have Vargas that's going to move up a slot. And I can promise you we're not signing a Mats-level pitcher for $8 million. We're just going to figure – someone will come up with some numbers that says Oswalt will be the same guy. You know, he'll maybe win a few less games, whatever else. But for the money, Oswalt is making $500,000 and Mats is making $8 million, so you don't take Mats. So if we constantly make that choice – this slight variation, let's say Mats, you know, pitches to one level and Oswalt pitches slightly less but makes a lot less, we're going to get all these guys like that are making slightly less or a lot less money with less statistics, and then we're going to have a crappy team. That's how we got into this mess. So to me, if you're not going to retain the starter, that's your strength, and dump everybody. Just start over at that point, and just to keep half of them and trade the other half to not replace them. Like,
yeah,
I don't see
that
where the equals winning. Yeah,
Matt's is a bargain. So I think he has a ton of trade value.
Yeah, he's a bargain.
Yeah, I think so too.
He's got potential. It's just he's a frustrating guy to watch. I mean, if
sure.
there's a game that if I tell you, look, there's going to be a big game, whether it's a series game, you know, to win the series, or it's a playoff game, and in the first inning, you're going to be up 5-0. The last guy I want to hear is pitching that game is Matt's. I'd rather have Seth Lugo pitching those games. Lugo's got better composure than Matt does. Huh?
Lugo's arm is hanging by a thread. Would you rather have Vargas? Because chances are it's Vargas that would be pitching that game.
No,
if you trade Matt
or Gazelman.
But Lugo's injured. Lugo might be gone any moment, you know, and we need somebody in the pen,
better
too.
Than Matt.
Yeah, right now. Yeah, I agree with you.
Lugo in a heartbeat. I agree with you, Nick. I think that curveball, that on the elbow.
I take Lugo in a heart. I'm saying Lugo over Matt. No way would I have Vargas. Vargas has been a monumental mistake.
Right, but the reality is Vargas. The reality is Vargas.
Dribble just
Lugo,
hit another home run.
Look, Lugo.
Last home
Lugo
run at the Met for his trade.
That's great. Lugo at any point could be done. I mean, Vargas is here. Vargas
they
is
all
not going anywhere.
At any point.
Right, yeah, but Lugo has the injury. I mean, Lugo, you're waiting for the tear to get worse. So, like, the idea is Vargas is the guy that's signed. If they trade Mets, it's Vargas. I mean, that's the guy. That's who takes Mets' position. And I wouldn't want to see Vargas. I don't want to see Vargas, period. But so you're talking about, yes, Mets is frustrating. I agree with you. But wouldn't you rather, like,
Vargas on this team? Yeah, I know. Remember Sean
Marks? I know, right?
I have a Vargas. I don't even care about Vargas, literally. Hey, when he pitches, I just don't even watch the game. We always have a Vargas. Oh, you can't
flex
on.
Give me a flex in.
Yeah, Chris Flexen. Oh, my God. I hate that guy. He sucks. He looks like a real dick. He just looks like a tool.
God.
You just know he's a dick in the bar. I don't not like Chris Flexen.
That's so right.
But
you
got
true,
right? There's a,
Bruce
there's
Bereni,
a component here,
Tom though. Hausman. Like, there's so many of them.
we have a freaking Vargas.
Dyer Miller. There is a component here, though. When you look at a Lugo, you look at a Gazelman, even a DeGrom, who snuck up on the entire franchise. You know, they do have guys that come up, and you know, Lugo plays the most important game in Puerto Rico's history. You know, and they let him do that, which is what killed DeGrom, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
the most important game of his career wasn't here; it was in Puerto Rico.
Yeah. But you know what? It goes back to what Dave said, and I disagree to an extent where guys want to win. Guys want to win. Guys want to get paid. Mm-hmm. You know, when you take a Jason Worth that went to the Nationals, Pudge went to Detroit, those were hellholes.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't going there to rebuild. They were going there to get their ass paid. You can still convince Bryce Harper to play for the Mets because they don't give a shit about winning. Fans give a shit about winning. Not that players don't ever want to win. Old players want to win a World Series. Young players want to get fucking paid. And that's how you rebuild a team.
Yeah.
You can get
money.
Any free agent to come here.
Yeah.
You can.
Too bad we don't have $50 million in advance this offseason. Oh, wait, we do.
According to you, we do. It's just waiting to be spent.
Yeah, right. Good luck. Keep waiting for that.
Dave, let me ask you this. I don't mean to hijack the show. Sorry, Nick.
No. Go ahead. We're all here.
Is it worse to be a Mets fan in 2018 or from what you're seeing being a Nationals fan? Because this was supposed to be like candy year in Washington.
Yeah.
It's his walk year. He's got Scherzer. He's got funny eyes. He's going to win everything. What's going on down there?
I love it. I love it. Everyone's wringing their hands. It's just wonderful. Unfortunately, you know, They still had the glow from the Caps Stanley Cup victory. So I see so much watching Caps gear now. It's incredible. But it's great. You know, and plus, you know, they had the All-Star game here, and it's just this all hype for this season was going to be all about you know, Harper and Scherzer, and then you see the dugout fight between Scherzer and what's his name?
That's great.
Yep.
Strasburg. Yeah, it's classic.
They love to fight. They love to fight. It's amazing. I've only seen that twice in the
Papelbon.
Like the very modern era. Yeah. It's always them. It's always
the team
it's their star players too. It's their star players. The best hitter and the best pitchers. That's great.
Question.
I love it. Yeah.
To answer your question, though, it's much worse to be a Mets fan because we didn't have high expectations for this season, although we had expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And when we had that start, dude, I was freaking talking major smack. I was Mr.
Mm-hmm.
Met everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've just been in hell for 3 months now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's worse for us.
I read
totally
about
agree.
Mickey,
mm-hmm.
and he said that the point of the season where everything changed is when this Jinx guy came up to him and said he's having a great season. Keep at it. And this guy named Dave. I don't hear that. Whoever this Dave is, we should find him. He's our Bartman. Because from that point on, everything was funny.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was awful. He was with some smoke show. Get into a black Mercedes in front of the Ritz-Carlton. And I was like, hey, doing a hell of a job, Mickey. He's like, thanks.
You can't lose. The next day, batter in order.
Oh, my God. Wow, this is I agree with Dave. I'd be a Nationals fan in a second. I mean, as far as it's choosing the mood, I mean, I would literally be a Nationals fan. But they, you know what? To me, the Nationals almost remind me of the Yankees from the 80s. They're making wrong moves. There's a lot of chaos, but at least they're spending some money. They're trying in some, like the Nationals might sign Harper back. If we had Harper. There would be no chance. We wouldn't even be in the conversation nationally. It would be what team's getting Harper, period. At least you read the Nationals might retain him. They're included in the story. We would not even be in the story. They wouldn't even say why. There wouldn't even be a story questioning why the Mets wouldn't get him back. It would be an assumption that the Yankees would. They would anything, but we're not even in the conversation. And that, to me, that's the amount of years we've been this team. It's to the point of it's not even questioned anymore. It's like we got to trade Wheeler before free agency because it's we don't sign him. We will pay for Vargas. That's fine because we need one. You're right. We always need a Vargas. But any pitcher that we have, any hitter, anybody that's any good, except for David Wright specifically, you know, of course he's going to leave. That's what, you know. Why would we sign him? Why? Nothing. You know. So totally nuts, totally not, and that's why I'd rather be a Nationals fan because at least they might sign their guy. They're trying. They suck. You know, they'll never win anything, but and their fan base knows it. If you ever look at their sort of forms, their in-game stuff, which I love to do, from the beginning of the year, the second after the first week, it was basically doomsday because they're scarred too in their own way. And I'm enjoying it though.
I thought I was angry. Dave.
Oh my God.
Dave, have you ever seen him this angry before?
No, it's crazy. Dude, you can't.
I mean, come off the ledge, man.
Dude, I love baseball.
Yeah,
love this sport. It's driving me nuts. It's
you make Steve look mellow.
Yeah, seriously. I know. I'm turning into Steve. I look in the mirror. I look like Steve. I think I might even be Steve at this point. You know what? It's like I like one sport. This is it. And it's annoying enough to see how the sport's changed in all these ways and to see like people that run MLB basically be tone deaf to the point of they talk about the future of the sport being successful in terms of how much money they make. Tone deaf to the people that are watching the sport don't give a rat's ass how much money they make. It's about the enjoyment. So they're killing the nature of the sport. You already have to deal with that. And then you got your team basically making chaos moves. The national media, just for stories, is basically bullying them into making crazy freaking moves, or at least creating the narrative that tortures us. I mean, you go on Mets blog as a great example, right? And they have, you have somebody posted a story about like the Padres scouting Thor and they want him. The Mets are not trading Syndergaard to the Padres. They're not doing it. I mean, if he's going to go, you know, there's teams
for
that
Tony
have loaded systems. Yeah, well, bingo. You know, mm-hmm. It's not happening. But yet the story's there. So what is the story there for? It's clickbait, but it's to torture us. And so it's something in general that is a pastime. You use it to forget about your problems, to sort of enjoy a game, you know. And I haven't enjoyed this in years, and since 2015, only for 3 months, mind you. And this stuff, it's like it gets to you. You know, you read an article about Syndergaard going to the Padres. Why do I need to read that? He's not going to the Padres. But yet, you know, it's this stuff, this repetitive narrative, and it's creating something stressful out of the only sport I like and out of the team that I've been looking at for 30 years. And so for that reason, that's where the anger is coming from. You know, sort of like, don't pull me
what
in
about the Baltimore Orioles?
And do this.
Well, what year, did you,
sure.
what year did you become a Mets fan?
Me? It's hard for me to pinpoint. I think I switched. Like, in other words, I was both when I was a little kid, and I think I became a Mets-only guy around 1982, I think, 82, 81, something like that.
So I think that's part of the issue. Like, so you became a Mets fan, you know, when they had a really nice run, a great World Series, and really exciting times.
Well,
became a Mets fan.
Before that.
Like, around 74.
It was Mike Fitzgerald years. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry about that.
So I just had like a decade of nothing. So like now, you know, I want the Mets to win all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I appreciate baseball and strategy, whether or not the Mets win. I kind of live and breathe with them too. Mm-hmm. But seasons like this, they don't drive me insane, man. I think it's driving you insane. What do you think, Gene?
Oh, it's totally driving me insane.
I think it's driving him insane in a different way. And I think there's something to what Dave's saying, though, because you saw, like, I'm only a few years before you, but I was living in the 79-80, which was still, this team is horrible. If they play 500 baseball, you have a gift from God. And as they started to ascend in the 80s, you could see, like, the linear path of it all going to, you know, culminates in 1986. But, you know, looking back on the decade, but to Nick's credit, he also went through the 90s with this team. Late 80s, 90s, when there was high expectations, the Alomars and all the bad stuff that went through there. So I don't think that you're naive to that. It's just, I think what was happening was you were promised that red bike on Christmas, and you didn't get, you got the red bike
that
didn't have its front wheels on.
Let me explain myself here, because I do understand where you're coming from. So
no, we know you better
preface,
than you know you, Nick. So listen.
Right. Well, no. I'll tell you what. Like I do believe that. I believe that other people can, you know, very often evaluate you better than you can evaluate yourself, right? So I get that. I'm just giving you guys the rest of the variables here. And if you still feel that way, you might be right. And I think you very well might be. But I will say this. First of all, I was a baseball fan before I went Mets only. I was a baseball fan as a little kid. I remember the 78 World Series, stuff like that. I used to be a Yankee fan when I was a really young kid.
But they were winning.
But here's the thing. I switched to the Mets. I remember it was 1982. And it was basically I remember looking through their yearbook. I remember Randy Jones starting as being their best pitcher with Craig Swan trying to come back. And so you guys, especially, let's say, all right, Gene, you date back to the late 70s, so you can remember when they were trying to get Dave Winfield, when they were trying to get Pete Rose, but not really, and they bring nobody in here, and that concept. But first of all, the bad ownership was on the way out. You knew the DiRolay family was not going to keep the team, so there was no hope, you know? But on top of it, it's what's driving me batty now are the two things that didn't exist back then. First of which, Dave, what you said originally, loving the strategy of baseball, the nuances. I love that. I love the stolen base, the triple, the complete game. All these little things I love about the game, one by one, are systematically removed from it. So it's not the same. It's not that game you're remembering, and for me too, right? That's one thing. But on top of it, it's the social media. It's a concept of when it was the late 70s, and you're going through the point where they're getting rid of Seaver, they're getting rid of everybody. You weren't, let's say, before Seaver's gone, constantly all day long getting inundated with Seaver might go to the Yankees or Seaver might go to what, like, you're not, you don't hear that stuff. So you put it out of your head. You only deal with what's happening. Here, they're just torturing you. And so for me, I'm on social media. I see stuff. And it's creating, taking something that's a pastime and creating a stressful concept out of it and telling me basically, if you don't like it, you know, don't look at it. Don't. But that's,
right.
You know, it's, so it's taking something away from me, and that's where the reaction's coming.
Mm-hmm. It does seem to me it's somewhat self-induced, so I do appreciate
yeah.
you get inundated with it. I frankly stay away from Mets blog and a couple other things. I look at Sports Spider mm-hmm. and I glance through articles
right.
pretty much every morning over my coffee. But
okay.
that's it, you know. I'm not nearly as engaged on Mets Twitter and other things as I used to be, although I still keep some friendships, just because it's
right.
weird. And I found it very distracting from my love of the sport of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So I've tried
right.
to delve back into more the on-field things than the
mm-hmm.
off-field things. And I've found it's just more fun.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, did you guys, like when you were growing up, did you get Baseball Digest and really dig into that stuff? Like, did you enjoy that process?
Yeah, I had it delivered to my house. I watched the game of the week on Saturday with Joe Garagiola.
Mm-hmm.
I watched
mm-hmm.
all the Lindsay, Bob Murphy, and Ralph broadcast for the Mets. But it was all about the joy of the sport. Like you said, like, oh, the
mm-hmm.
De La Rays, we knew that they were going to leave. Dude, I was 15. I had no fucking clue who on the Mets. I didn't care.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't
know
what was going on the field. You know, so that's, I think, I don't know, it's just a slight maybe nuanced perspective on the game. I think you have probably a more fulsome view of it than I do, but I try to focus a little more on field stuff. But I was a big guy. Man. I knew all the players and all their baseball cards and stats. But I had no idea.
Well, the other dimension.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, Dave. Let's go ahead.
No.
The other dimension is Dave and I aren't in New York City. And I remember
mm-hmm.
as a kid living in Florida, I spent the entire summer in New York. I loved going and, you know, reading the daily news where they had,
mm-hmm.
you know, they had the Mets players in the top 10 in hitting that were in bold. And I'm like, wow,
mm-hmm.
like everybody else likes the Mets here too. You know, there was no team in Florida, there was no Marlins, you know. But
right.
it was just, it was, you could get everything. But I didn't know who owned the team. I knew the managers. I knew the players.
Mm-hmm.
But I missed the days, and I'm not on social media first, and I stopped doing,
mm-hmm.
you know, NewJersey.com.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
because of that, because it wasn't fun. Like people, like I want to
mm-hmm.
be around people that are going to be like upset, but upset for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is what
right.
I think should be going on. Not like somebody
okay.
going, oh, it's
not
stuff.
Like Nick. Not
that's
like
stupid.
Nick, right? That's what you're saying. Like
exactly.
Got it.
No, that's where I met Nick.
Very subtle.
But the thing
you know?
Is,
yeah, I know.
Yeah, but the thing is, what I also miss is. I learned about the Hernandez and the Carter trade by picking up the paper in the morning, and I was,
mm-hmm.
you know, I watched every sports show and read Inside Pitch, and I read all the
mm-hmm.
Transactions and things, rumors or whatever. But the surprise of those trades was great, you know. And there's no, not that there's no surprise now, but
mm-hmm.
there's a lot more hype, and it does stress you out.
Yeah.
I, you know, there's not going to be a Gary Carter comes to the and I remember. The headlines and going,
mm-hmm.
please say Mets, please say Mets, please say Mets. And there he was coming to the Mets. You know,
mm-hmm.
Hernandez gets traded for a bag of balls and Neil Allen. Oh, man, this is the greatest thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how about, do you remember
that's
when Piazza
not happening anymore.
Remember when Piazza
yes.
came? I was like, what?
Oh, yeah.
Piazza?
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
I could have knocked me with a feather. I had no clue.
Right.
What a moment.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, that's I love that.
Yeah, we
too. See, that, I miss that.
And we trade our best prospect, Preston Wilson, for him.
oh my God!
I mean, remember the
yeah.
shock? Remember the shock of trading Toley? I mean, how disappointed you were. All right.
oh, of course.
Where were you when Josh Toley?
I'm like, why would we trade Toley and Dickey? Now, Toley, what are we going to do? And what's his name? Nickias, like, why would you trade him?
Please remember,
all
the
way
to
Toronto.
Trying to get over them.
Toronto, see those guys play?
Seriously, dude, I'm still trying to get over them trading Schiraldi. I mean, like a good end of the bullpen piece. Like, what's up with that?
Exactly.
Man, it's you know that look. I hear you, and I think you're absolutely right. And I think Dave, I think what you suggested is healthy. You know, but to that point, I mean. look, I appreciate the same thing about the game you guys appreciate it. And I think the reality is that what you're saying about your upbringing in the game is something that does resonate with me because I looked at the same stuff. I enjoyed the same stuff. So,
yeah.
And look, winning is important to me. You're right. And, yes, I was influenced by those teams that I watched as I got older. But at the same respect, the team's been losing almost always since I became a fan of it. It maybe 3-4 years, they were really great, you know? And I've been okay. I haven't loved it. But the idea is that the narrative, I hear more about who's going to be pushed out without any plan. It's basically everyone is using the Mets as a farm team. And there's no and I don't see anything changing, and I see obvious things being ignored, which has never been happening before. It's not like people are having stories about some of these things and just discounting them, or they're just, it's like they don't exist. And it's because of all of it, and because of the fact you can't really avoid media, because it's not just social media, because the standard media has been sort of combined with it. So I'm not on Twitter at all with the Met stuff, but yet it's the newspapers, it's the national people. Yeah, well, that's the thing. I left for the same reason you left. You backed away from it a bit yourself. It's the fact of it's craziness. It's just it's not fun anymore. And I backed away from most social media, almost like Gene at this point, because it's not fun. It's like it's stressful. And
well,
so,
again. Can I give you a good social media story?
Uh-huh. Please do.
So do you remember, now we've been doing this for years, that we kind of had this connection with the UK Mets guys, and we did Desert Island Mets?
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah, of course.
Well, I've kept in contact with those guys on Facebook and Twitter.
Okay.
We kind of chit-chat around.
Uh-huh.
And one of the guys, he's talking about his trip to North America, coming to Vancouver, San Francisco, L.A.
Uh-huh.
Well, it turns out I'm going to be in Monterey the day they're driving back up to San Francisco, and he's going to all the California stadiums on this trip with his poor wife, and he and his wife are going to stop in and have dinner with us in Monterey. You believe that? My buddy's from Scotland, from UK Mets, and August 16th, baby, whoever's in Monterey, if you're listening, come out and join us for dinner and some baseball talk. That's a good part of that social media. Yeah.
I love it. Well, Dave, I have something similar to announce. I do. Hey, Gene, you want to hear my announcement?
Let's hear it.
You guys want to hear my announcement?
I want to hear an announcement.
Okay, so another figure from early Cult of Mets personality days is going to come visit me. I'm going to meet somebody in New Jersey. Okay. Okay. Now, don't freak out, guys. No. Don't freak out. I know it's a big name.
Bertrand?
Big name. Yes, Carl. You got my joke. It's Carlos Beltran, right? Exactly. And there will be. I don't know if he'll do it. I'm going to ask him for a hug. I'm going to try to get it to make me heal my baseball heart, Carlos Beltran. Taryn Cooper, where are you? Oh God.
So you're not really, yeah.
No.
What a letdown.
So I went to Lynn Cohen, Gary Cohen's wife, does this charity event every year, this GTR event, and my wife and I went and worked it with her, and there was a bunch of Mets Twitter people there and folks you may or may not know, but they're all very active on social media. It was great. We got to meet Keith Hernandez and Ron Darling and Gary Cohen, and just an incredible event. So if you guys want to go next year, I'll kind of get you all the details, but it's really...
Why couldn't we go this year? Why do we have to wait till next year?
Well, you missed it.
You gave us a wood box 1 year. Now we don't even get a fucking wood box. And I still have that wood box. I love that.
I keep my watches and cufflinks in there, man. I love that box, too.
I know. I mean, we used to get gifts from you. We used to hear from you. But now you got new friends. And you do stuff in California. And that's okay. That's okay. We'll get you.
I keep all my pictures of Rob Z in the box. Hey, Rob. How you doing? Oh, God. I had a good old day.
Joe Smith from Colgate Community College says hello.
I guess we can close up shop and we'll complain after the deadline. Close up. Can you guys get each one of you give me like your just off the top of your head your top five Oswalt pitchers, like the guy or the Jason Vargas, like that guy. It could be a pitcher or it could be a hitter. Mike Jorgensen, like the guy that Mets always have. Pitcher, give me pitcher and hitter. Like give me the one or two of them that really stand out to you.
All right, so you're looking for the emblematic mm-hmm. Mets. I will give you two.
Okay.
Get ready for these. Because they have those flashes of goodness where you think that, okay, not bad, but it's a very, very, very typical Met.
Right, okay.
All right, hitter, Joel Youngblood.
Okay.
He led the team with 16 home runs.
Mm-hmm. And you tried it twice in one day.
Yep.
Or rather,
exactly.
two teams in one day.
Hits
right.
in two countries. Yeah.
Yep, and I'll give you one more, a hitter, Willie Montanez, part of my least favorite trade in Mets history, when he got rid of both John Milner and John Matlack in that huge mega trade in, I think, 77, 78, which was like a black cloud hung over me for months and months. You know, why are they doing these to my favorite players? Let's see, and a pitcher, yeah, I already said him, but, I, you know, to me, it's always Sean Markham. That is always the guy. Yeah, no other team would have gotten Sean Markin with that shoulder other than Matt. So those are my. I gave you three instead of two.
Yeah, Gene, what do you got?
I'm going to give you two pitchers and a hitter.
Okay.
Okay. A little bit older. Just wait here. We can have some fun.
Okay.
John
okay.
Pacella. Remember John Pacella?
Okay.
Yeah.
Every time John Pacella would pitch, his hat would fall off.
No, he's Italian.
Yeah, and his hat would come off. And from the left side, Pete Falcone. You swore Pete Falcone was going to make it. Like, Pete Falcone, Mats, I know this guy's going to be good. Every team's going to want him. And my favorite example of a hitter that you're like, this guy is going to hit 50 home runs. I know it. Claudel Washington. He's so strong. When he hit him, there
And he looked, he had the same physique as Darryl Strawberry. He had that real tight, strong body, but man, he was just no plate discipline whatsoever.
No, Claudel.
Yeah. Well, wasn't that the same offseason as.
Nick.
Well, wasn't Claudel Washington the same offseason as Dave Winfield? Like, they were trying to get the cheaper Dave Winfield. It didn't work.
No, Dave Winfield was a little bit later.
I thought it was 1980.
Yeah, I think it was a year
later.
Like,
the off-season of 79-80, no? Maybe I'm wrong. Oh, no,
Winfield
I'm sorry.
Was
that Ellis Valentine? Ellis Valentine was the same year as Winfield, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was...
Best right field arm I've ever seen. Vlad Guerrero, But Ellis was I saw him throw the ball so hard to third base, I thought it was going to go through the guy's glove.
Oh my God, I got a couple. I'm looking at Ed Lynch. Ed Lynch to me is one of those. He was the going to be the number two, I think, behind Gooden and all that group. And I remember seeing Ed Lynch and thinking like. There was like there's been a million Ed Lynch's ever since, you know, or like a guy like Terry Leach. Remember Terry Leach all of a sudden?
Yeah.
was a thing for
10-0.
A while. Yeah, exactly. Or believe it or not, Nelson Figueroa is another one. Like just always there, and you never quite knew. Or Joe McEwing. Joe McEwing is another guy like that where you just everyone loves him except you. You just wonder why. And you know what's really funny?
But they gave
one
Ed Lynch
guys,
a share.
What'd you say?
Didn't they give Ed Lynch a share of the World Series money because they thought he was part of the building process? No, they didn't. Like they voted to give him shares of the World Series money when he was gone, yeah.
You know what? I'll give you guys one thing. Can you name this one guy that was just like that, to me at least, that I remember that when he left the Mets, became somebody special. And I think there's been a few of them.
Mike
few,
Scott.
Like, there we go.
Con, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. God. Anyway, guys, want to bring up anything else before we get going?
Wait, who's your hitter? Yeah, who's your hitter,
dude? Oh, shit. Yeah, well, you know what? John Orsolak.
John Orsolak.
John, how many of him have we had? How many do we have right now, actually?
Jason Tyner.
Yeah, Jason Tyner.
Oh, Jason Tyner.
Well, so every team's got like four or five. That's why it's almost hard to name them. Sometimes, like the late 70s, it was nothing but those guys. It was like those guys and Lee Mazzilli.
Yeah.
That's it. You know? Yeah, Elliot Maddox.
Who was my favorite player? That was
Ron Hodges.
Player.
Really?
Yep.
Danny Heap.
Yeah. Give us Danny. I like Danny Heap. I was always like you know, Danny Heap's up. Great. Let's go. You know, all right, I got a random one for you before we hang up. Who is the 86 Met you couldn't stand? The one guy that you felt didn't fit, the guy that you sort of didn't want to see up. Was there, like, anybody on that team where you were like, oh, God?
Well,
go ahead.
The Doug Sisk drove me nuts. But I was actually embarrassed of Lenny Dykstra when he came up.
Really?
I was really embarrassed that he was a Met because he looked – just deformed.
I loved him.
He would twitch. Oh, yeah. I was like, everybody else looks so like they're ready to go, and he looks like somebody's little brother that showed up, and it was either him or the dog, and he wound up getting big hits, but I was a little embarrassed when he showed up.
You know, for me, I was a huge, huge Wally Backman fan. I loved him. I loved Backman. Well, I loved Gardenhire. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't like Tim Tuffle. You know, I felt
Tuffle
like,
Shuffle,
you know,
dude. Tuffle Shuffle.
Yeah, but I always wanted Wally in there, you know, every single time. And when Tuffle played, I used to get pissed. And and Backman had a much better season, but, you know, Dave Johnson was all about the lefty-righty and, you know, platooning and everything. But, yeah, Tuffle, I guess. I didn't, like, hate him. But I was like, I don't want this guy in there. I want to see Wally.
Nick, it was Mookie for you, right?
I had two of them, actually. Mookie. Because Mookie...
The only guy in New York who doesn't like Mookie Wilson.
I know. God. You know what it is? To me, in my brain, when I'm watching Met games, Mookie strikes out 100% of the time. He just... I was at Game 6, and I remember... Mookie coming up, and I remember how upset I was, just thinking, like, oh, come on. Like, out of all the guys, like, he's not going to make contact. Like, he's going to strike out. And as it turned out, it took the Red Sox to screw that one up because he did almost strike out. It's just, you know, it just occurred how it occurred. But basically, Mookie, to me, I mean, if you really think of it, you know, he had a couple of really good stolen base years early on. If it wasn't for that ground ball, you know, and the fact he had a Mookie, he had a great nickname. I didn't see it, man. Like, he, to me, got a lot of hype because those early teams were so terrible. And I don't know, I never felt it. And Jesse Orozco's the other one. And I feel the same way.
You didn't
like
him?
No, I didn't. I just, he was too hittable. And to me, like, you know, the fact I loved Randy Myers when he was around. I liked, man, I dug, what's his face? Hotfoot guy. I don't know why the name's escaping me now for
McDowell,
whatever reason.
Roger McDowell.
McDowell, yeah, I love McDowell. You know, but for some reason, Jesse Orozco is the same exact feeling I had when John Franco came in. Kind of these, like, semi-soft tossing pitchers that kind of try to fool the hitter. And, you know, there's no, you know, it wasn't quite Armando Benitez, but it was close. You know, that kind of a feeling.
I feel like that for Franco, but I didn't feel like that for Orozco. I mean, my family has a saying. It's called, you know, when you do something, like, you lose your own keys and then you find them, we're like, good job, John Franco, because that's what he would do. He'd load the bases and get the save. It's like, you started the fire and you put it out, and now you want to be Citizen of the Year? Like, you did this to yourself. And so, but I didn't feel like that with Orozco. Maybe I was just seeing it through different lenses.
Maybe. I was also young. Maybe I didn't see it right. And Dave, what do you think?
I think you're on drugs. Those are great players.
Mookie. Should be. I really should be.
I'm going to take all those like Mookie.
72 times.
I know.
He 72 times.
Well, not personal.
Well, he was
I like Mookie personally.
I tell you why I didn't like – the only reason why I had a negative feeling toward Mookie was the same way that Dave was toward Tuttle. I was such a huge Mazzilli fan. And when Mookie came around, they wanted to push Mazzilli around the first base and other spots. I'm like, Mazzilli's the best player the Mets have ever had. You know, that's how I was a kid, you know. But but I didn't – in 86, I thought he did I thought that was the best year of platoons and bench ever.
Right.
You know – even before that with Staub, you know, with Heap and Staub, and they just got they were a clutch hitting team, and this franchise hasn't had a lot of hitting. I mean, it's for me though, that was that was managed well, even if they were your favorite players. But I didn't feel like that toward Orozco.
Orozco, by the way, 86. He was 8 wins, 6 losses, 2.33 ERA, 21 saves.
Dude, that's
the
40, and then
the numbers back you up. I mean, I'm not saying. I mean, these guys have the accomplishments. I'm not saying it's necessarily rational. I'm just saying that. I mean, look, the all-time saves leader for lefties is Don Franco. I think we all had the same feeling when Franco came in. Like here we go. But the numbers back it up. So it's just the feeling you get.
I like them better with the Reds.
Me too. I liked Randy Myers better. That pissed me off, that trade. That trade pissed me off. It was when we were dumping everybody. This kind of like anybody good on the team, it's almost like they strategically went and all the fun players to watch just got eliminated one by one.
Yeah, Dykstra and McDowell, those trades were horrible. That was just like a big FU to New York.
Seriously. It was just tone deaf. I mean, yeah, but, you know, that's sort of when we started becoming this version of the Mets, right? Like, all the players we liked were removed, and Steve Phillips and Omar kind of both seem to have gotten to Fred Wilpon a little bit. And outside of that, it's been a lot of Joe Orsolex. It's been just a stream of 1,000-pound weightlifters on crappy heels and Joe Orsolex and Jason Vargases. So yeah, good stuff, guys.
But there's also mixed in a bunch of old roots and. You know, Venturas that have come in here. Like the best season in some of our offensive history was Bernard Gilkey and Lance Johnson, you know, that came out of nowhere and just had unreal seasons. And nobody even remembers that they were Mets. I mean, Bobby Valentine basically kicked Gilkey right off the team. But you get those types of players.
Derek Bell.
And there's still hope, Nick.
Yeah, dude, I completely agree with you. Once every 18 years. or every 10 years, I guess. You know, I totally agree. There'll be a Derek Bell living on a boat, you know, hitting some for us. Or I agree. You know, this Joe Orsolak has his day. He has his day, and I am waiting for it. I can't wait. We're going to be winners, right? Right, guys? Feeling good?
That's what Horowitz said.
Oh, my God, Jay Horowitz. I love him.
he was so right. He didn't even know it. But he was surprised. He's like, this team has a plan. You just don't understand it. I'm like, what don't we understand? Help us understand. It's going to come together. You'll see. Okay,
we
Santa Claus.
Right.
We'll see. Yeah.
We were both right. That's the craziest thing. He was right about the immediate future. We were right about the long-term thing. He's like, there's players coming. Yes, and there was. And we're like, but they're going to screw it up. And there we go. Oh, God. It's nice to be right. Isn't it? Everybody was right. I love when everybody's
David?
Right. You know, David. Hello, David.
David Wright?
Oh, David Wright. Well, insurance is covering it. Isn't that great? You know,
would you rather be loved or feared?
Feared, always.
I want people to fear how much they love me.
I fear how much I love you, Dave. I fear it every day. I get up in the morning, that's the first thing I think about. I have a little alarm and it goes off and this little voice comes out of my phone and goes, Fear Dave. Fear how much you care about Dave. Where's Dave today?
Dave's not here.
I looked longingly at your Facebook picture, and then I sort of just wilt back into bed.
Don't tell me you're masturbating to my picture again.
Oh, yeah, no, it fell right off, dude. It's like after a month of it, it just, there wasn't anything left. It was just a little carcass. It was like a little rat carcass. you're right. I probably do need drugs or an intervention. I think a little more meds, a little more. Like, talk to me around the trading deadline, and, you know, maybe I'll check myself in someplace for 3 days, and you guys can come visit me.
Just remember this, buddy.
Yeah.
The Kazmir thing wasn't as bad as everybody thought. It wasn't good, but it wasn't as Tom Seaverish as everybody thought. So,
well, we could have gotten,
you know,
it. You know, it was just sort of like that was a pass.
Yeah.
Victor Zambrano, dude. Victor Zambrano. Got that, you know,
one hitter.
Got a good spin rate. Got a good spin rate.
One hitter.
His spin rate's amazing. Gene, how's your spin rate? Is your spin rate good?
It's a little off.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it spins down versus out, and that's not good. So.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Hey, my phone's blowing up. I got to go.
Yeah.
Who got traded?
I don't know what's going on, but it's in a constant vibrate mode, so better see what's happening in the world.
It's Jeff Wilpon. He's listening. He's our only listener now, and he's upset.
It might be our fan.
Yeah.
Listen, he's going to be so excited.
And Nick,
we're back.
Yeah, yeah. And Nick, I got to go. I got nothing to do. So.
Oh, Lordy. All right, gentlemen. Well, listen, it's been a lot of fun. I missed you guys. And if we're not going to win, at the very, very least, we've got each other. And that's really what matters, right? I think.
Let's do it again.
Right on.
Hello? Hello?
Cool. Wait, what is that?
Hello?
Voices from the past, Steve Keen. All right, gentlemen. Well, again, we'll talk very soon, hopefully, and maybe it'll be good news. You never know. Right?
Come on.
Come on. Good night, everybody.
All right, see you, boys.
See you later, guys.